Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, Manhattan Beach 360. On Friday, August 3rd, 2018, live, love, laugh, and leave a legacy. That's what we do here in the South Bay of Los Angeles, and it's a really beautiful place to do just that.
The South Bay Show is brought to you by the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce. The Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce has been serving the city of Manhattan Beach for over 60 years, and they are dedicated to promoting a strong local economy by supporting the community, providing valuable business connections, and representing business with government. The Chamber staff is focused on providing its membership with the tools and resources to help businesses grow and thrive within the community. Their goal is to continually support the individual efforts of business as they work to support the growth of the local economy. For more information on how the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce is working with member businesses and the City of Manhattan Beach to support that growth, visit the website at manhattanbeachchamber.com or call 310-545-5313.
I'm your host, Joe Terry, and you can read all about our many adventures on Facebook at facebook.com/The South Bay Show. Persistence, passion, principle, and purpose. That's what we talk about here on The South Bay Show. Joining us today as producer and co-host, president and CEO of the Manhattan Beach Chamber, Mr. Mark Lips. And of course, with us because of our great partnership with South Bay by Jackie.com and executive producer of the South Bay Show, Jackie Balestra. Hey, Jackie, Mark, how are you guys doing today?
Happy Friday,
Happy
Joe.
Happy Friday, Joe.
Happy Friday. Happy Friday.
Hey, you know what? This is the first time. No, it's not the first time. I don't want to insult anybody. But, you know, I was really listening to that intro. And I would like to point out that one of the things this chamber has really tried to do is to be relevant, to be a resource for our small businesses. We're here to help. I tell businesses all the time, you need to annoy us. This is the one entity where we want you to annoy us. We need you to give us your thoughts and opinions and feedback. And so that's absolutely right. We're doing seminars free, by the way, to our members. And I've made the State of the City free to our members, and a lot of things that we nickeled and dimed them for, we're now relying on sponsors, but they are free to small businesses or to our members because, you know, Manhattan Beach is a little community made up of mostly small businesses. And so it really becomes relevant that this chamber be what, in the true sense of what a chamber of commerce is supposed to be, and that is to be a resource for small business. So I really like that opening that you guys gave. So thank you very much.
Looks like we earned
Friday.
Our keep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there you go. $40 is in the mail. So I told you, yeah, United Nations has left the house. I now have no – I can run around in my underwear again. The France and Russia left yesterday or Wednesday. And it was interesting, Jackie, you and I have talked a few times about their perceptions of the United States versus, what we know. And Russia is interesting. He said the median income in Russia where he lives is $500 a month. He said we make so much more money. And it's apparent, he said, it's very obvious. He said, we all live in apartments, and we don't take our furniture with us when we move. We go to another apartment, and there's furniture there waiting for us. So I guess they're not concerned too much about design or feng shui. The helpings of our food, we overserve. They can't finish meals here, they said. But they like that. They're teenagers. So, you know, they love having these big helpings of food. So they actually like that. The ocean, the beach. The French guy, which I thought was interesting, you know, we're board shorts and T-shirts, right? He loves the fashion of the South Bay. He said it's so much more casual here than in France. And so he loves that. He wishes France was a lot more casual like that and not so, I guess, fashion conscious of what you're wearing and stuff. So I think he's seen the beach community versus maybe some other areas. So,
well, you can't knock those French women. Nobody dresses like a French woman. They have a lot of style.
Right.
So,
I always appreciate that. Super excited about the guests we have on today because we're going to be talking about something that's near and dear to me, and that's Leadership Manhattan Beach. But I also want to mention that I'm gonna see if we can get him to open up on just his instincts, because this guy, one of these guys, has I think he started Manhattan Beach, actually. I think he founded Manhattan Beach. But we've got some interesting things coming up on City Council. And one of them is kind of, you just never thought about it ever happening, and that is perhaps changing the name of Sepulveda to PCH, ever since El Segundo hung the banner across the street there. Now people are, I've got big businesses, mainly big businesses, coming up and saying we've got to change this. They're pushing council to make some changes, a couple members on council that are really pushing for it as well. And then, of course, I don't know if you guys were aware of it, you, not living here, but we're getting ready to, and we're going to public comment for raising our parking meter rates. So that it can be self-sustaining to have new smart meters. And it was interesting, too, on that, in that some people say, why do we need smart meters? That's just going to make it worse around here, bring in more people. But then again, if you can cut people driving around in circles and finding a parking place, maybe that's a good thing. I don't know. But it's got to be self-sustaining, because we reach into our general fund every year to pull money out for parking rates. And then something you guys are very familiar with, I'm surprised Joe hasn't gone out and already bought one, and that's these dockless scooters that are being dropped off everywhere. So that's going to be
they're on the agenda soon. They're all over.
You know, I got to tell you something. Those scooters, you're right. You said it last week. They're using those scooters instead of walking, and I have a problem with that. Using a bike to get around, you're moving, all right? Using a scooter, you're not. And by the way, I remember you talking about I believe it was last week, Mark, about the rules and regulations. As a matter of fact, Manhattan Beach Police Department sent me a press release about the rules for motorized scooters.
Yep.
Most of which I didn't know. And right after I read that, I was out and I saw two teenagers riding tandem on one scooter. They were two people. And I thought, okay, that's illegal. I had literally just learned that a couple of minutes earlier. So, yeah, that is becoming an issue already. And, all right.
Well,
yeah.
I was shown a picture of a guy, an adult, on a scooter with no helmet riding in the middle of Sepulveda Boulevard. On one of those little scooters.
Right.
So,
that's
just an accident waiting to happen. But it's more the unfair, we can pass laws, but I don't like these unfair business practices. Like in El Segundo, once again, when the story blows up, it's all of a sudden they dropped off 100 scooters. Well, apparently, according to Beach Report, it was only 30 scooters. But one of the companies dropped off 30 scooters, just dropped them off at randomly in El Segundo. And, of course, people started using them, and then they applied for a business permit. So the tail wagged the dog. And so now Segundo is giving them it's a pilot program for 6 months for this business. So they've opened the door. And, I like what Steve said, Napolitano. He said, I've let the scooter companies know that, if they do that around here, they might find the scooters at the end of the pier.
They had the door kicked in El Segundo.
What do you think about Sepulveda and PCH?
I like continuity. I like that the whole South Bay should be PCH. I like that.
Okay. All right.
It's something that, Pacific Coast Highway, it's a destination for people around the world. And it's the same discussion about AVP. Does it add or detract from our local communities? And I think the bottom line is that AVP adds to our local communities, and it's a global media event. So it's good for property values. It's good for everything.
Well, that's PCH. The thing, though. It's history versus marketing and convenience. And so that's really what you have to wrestle with.
Okay. So now we have some amazing guests, and I can't wait to talk with them. One of the guests, I think, has something to say about being a native or a non-native of Manhattan Beach. We're going to find out. I'm excited to have them on. Jackie, who are our guests today?
Our guests this morning are Steve Carvell and Russ Lesser, and they're representing Leadership Manhattan Beach Program. Now, Steve Carvell is a Manhattan Beach-based estate planning attorney that has worked in the community for over a dozen years handling estate planning needs. He was a member of the Leadership Manhattan Beach class of 2017, where he was the class project co-lead for the renovation of Manhattan Beach's historic Santa Float, which has been in operation since 1955. He also served as the chairman of the Santa Float Committee for 4 years, where he managed the float's 5 special appearances and 15 nights out touring the community. Now, more recently, Stephen was elected to the board of directors of Leadership Manhattan Beach and serves as the alumni director. This is his first time on the board and is here to talk about the board's plans for the 2018-2019 year. Now, Stephen is also the most immediate past president of Kiwanis of Manhattan Beach and a regular guest on this program. Now, Russ Lesser's grandparents purchased a home in Manhattan Beach in 1917, and he and his wife live about 100 feet from the original family home. He attended Manhattan Beach schools and graduated from Cal State University at Long Beach with a degree in accounting. Russ served in the U.S. Army as a first lieutenant in the finance corps, then worked as a CPA in a Long Beach firm where he was a partner for 20 years before becoming elected managing partner. In 1990, he left the firm to become president of Body Glove International. Now, when Body Glove was sold in 2016, he remained president of the parent company, Dive & Surf. Russ served 8 years on the Manhattan Beach City Council, including 2 terms as mayor, served as president of the Manhattan Beach Chamber of Commerce, co-founded the Leadership Manhattan Beach Program, and also founded the Manhattan Beach 10K Run in 1978. Now, Russ and his wife, Charlotte, have received many awards individually and jointly, including Citizens of the Year in Manhattan Beach and Citizens of the Year for the South Bay. Russ, along with several family members and friends, formed the folk rock band Thin Ice, and can be found playing at various venues throughout the South Bay. So, Joe, Mark, this morning, we're going to discuss the history of Leadership Manhattan Beach at the current class and the future of this very successful program. Russ, Stephen, welcome to the program. We're so glad you could join us this morning.
Well, thank you. We're glad to be here.
Thank you, Jackie.
This is Russ.
Thank you.
This is Russ. I do one comment on the name change from Sepulveda Pacific Coast Highway. Back when I was a kid, living near the beach, we had T-shirts printed up that said, "There's no life east of Sepulveda." And I've still got some left. Does that mean I have to change those? There's no life east of Pacific Coast Highway?
No, those are valuable. Those are very valuable T-shirts.
Those
I want
great.
One of those.
Those are valuable.
Incredibly valuable.
So,
as will
right
be,
off the top.
My kids have already asked me, I want a Sepulveda sign. If they do that, Dad, I want a Sepulveda sign. You know.
I just want to start off with a personal note, Russ. I had a boss. When I first came to the South Bay 25 years ago, I was brought by a guy named Stephen Mitchell. And he employed me, and I love that guy. I love that guy. He's not around anymore,
Steve was a really, really good friend of mine. We were in business together. We coached baseball together. He was just a super guy. It was a tragedy when we lost him to cancer.
Tragedy.
But one of the sharpest guys I've ever known. Super guy.
You know, but most people don't know, he had a degree from was it Caltech?
he was a big SC guy, which was fine. That's kind of a UCLA guy, but that's okay. Nobody's perfect. I miss him every day. So he's a great guy. His wife, his widow, Beverly, is still a good friend.
You know, it's interesting.
Yeah.
I've talked to Russ.
I just wanted to start with that, but Mark?
I've talked with Russ offline many times, and I got to tell you, as a historian at heart, I never get tired of the early stories of Manhattan Beach. And I remember Russ telling me one time that when he moved here, most of Manhattan Beach was made up of summer residents. You know, these were second homes, mm-hmm. And it mm-hmm. may be getting that way now. I don't know, but second homes. And he said he got to know these people. He had friends that he only saw during the summer. He said I had a whole group of friends, and the only time I connected with them was in the summer, and then they were gone, and we waited till next summer. I just thought that was an interesting thing to grow up with.
You know, I got to tell you something, Mark. I grew up the same way. We had a bungalow in Rockaway Beach, and we were out the bungalow from Memorial Day to Labor Day every Sunday, every summer. Mm. And I only saw those Rockaway friends when I was in Rockaway.
Wow.
Same thing.
Yeah, the reason was the only people that really wanted to live in Manhattan Beach were poor people that couldn't afford a nice place somewhere inland like Pasadena or Inglewood.
Westchester,
Westchester, another place. So they'd have their little beach shacks and come down here, and we didn't have any place to go, so we were stuck here year-round. What a terrible fate.
Oh, terrible.
Times have changed.
Yeah.
Times have changed.
A lot for the better.
I think it's interesting that the badminton club built where they did because they needed to be out and away from everybody.
Yeah.
And you know, they're right smack in the middle of a pretty dense area.
Yeah, people talk about the good old days, you know, living up here, this is Russ, it's a beautiful place to live, Manhattan Beach. You know, a lot of people say, I don't like the changes, I don't like the big houses, but, you know, people who say, I don't like the big houses are usually one that's already got theirs, and they don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, people say, you know, when I grew up as a kid, literally the Hyperion plant was throwing pollution straight into the ocean.
Oh, yeah.
The beaches were polluted. The smog was horrible. If the east wind blew, Santa Ana winds blew, it was just horrible. You could hardly breathe. We've made huge strains. Mm-hmm. The South Bay was basically dead. Now you see porpoises and dolphins, and you see clams under your feet, and unfortunately stingrays too, unfortunately, sometimes, but that's beside the point.
Right.
And you know, the air is cleaner, the beaches are cleaner, the water's better. My dad worked for the post office, and he got paid twice a month, and we'd go out to eat twice a month. And we had to leave Manhattan Beach to find a decent restaurant. So you can talk about the good old days all you want, but I prefer them now. Don't prefer everything. I don't particularly like self-important people who think they're special because they have a lot of money, because I'm beach trash myself. That's the song I wrote. And most people in Manhattan Beach are really nice people, and they learn the beach lifestyle, and it's just a great place to live. So,
you know what I tell people?
I think we're going to rename the show the Russ Lesser Show.
Yes,
no, that's a bad idea.
And that would be a great idea. We might we get listeners. What I tell people all the time. Listen, if you go back to Russ's day, you go back to my day. Back when I was a young man here. Sure. Has it changed? Absolutely it's changed. But you know what people who've lived here for a year or so tell me? They love the small town appeal. So, you know, and I tell council all of the time, I said, it may be a bigger house, but you know what? They get on their bike outside of that house and tool around town just like a lot of other people. Now, granted, Russ is correct. You have a lot of entitled people. We've gotten a lot of affluence coming to town who feel that, you know, the world should revolve around them. One of the problems we've found with that is the lack of community, in that we're finding our volunteer base has shrunk because the affluence, people instead of working the snack stand at Little League Field, they just soon hand the person $200, $500, whatever it takes, and buy their way out because they can, you know. So.
Yeah.
Drawback.
Russ has made a great introduction to himself. I just want to bring Stephen into the conversation. Stephen Carvell, one of the things that Jackie and I have talked about over and over again is our experiences on Santa Float. What an experience that was. It continues to be a favorite topic of my own family's because of the pictures They love seeing pictures of me as a Santa's elf for some reason. I don't know why. And I'm talking family here in California and Texas and Chicago. They love seeing those pictures. Stephen, this has been a labor of love for you and the Kiwanis. And also, Leadership Manhattan Beach, what a great thing. I was in the inaugural class in 2003, Leadership Hermosa Beach. Tell us a little bit about the history of Leadership Manhattan.
Well, so, Joe, I hate to deflect on this, but I think we have an actual expert on the history of Leadership Manhattan Beach here. But
yeah,
before I turn it back to Russ, because I want to honor your request that I sort of get involved in the conversation, I'll talk about the Santa float just for a minute. It has been a labor of love. And what Mark was saying is that we're sort of running out of people to volunteer. That has been a challenge that we face. We face it in all the public service organizations. As the chairman of the Santa Float, I coordinate with 15 different city organizations and public service organizations and staffing the float's 15 nights. And I see it. I speak with the people. I understand that there's a decline in some public service organizations. People are too busy. People are, in some cases, just not willing to volunteer. But I'll tell you the one place that we never have a shortage of volunteers, and that's around the Santa Float, because it's such a special time for people. It really does create, it makes memories. And the reason it's so successful is because we've got an enormous amount of street cred with Santa. Santa might be the only guy in Manhattan Beach that has more street cred than Russ. I'm not sure about that, though. So turning it back to you, if you want to hear the true origins, and actually one of the things I'm really looking forward to hearing on this show is the true origins of Leadership Manhattan Beach. Russ is an original co-founder, so I'd really love to hear Russ talk about that.
Right.
Well, I guess I could do that. I got involved in learning about what leadership programs are when I worked in Long Beach and started a Leadership Long Beach program. And when I was on the city council for 8 years, a lot of people take leadership positions that are kind of one-issue people. I want more Little League parks, or I want more senior housing, or I want this. And they don't know how a whole city has to work together. So when I got off the city council and I happened to be, I think back then they called it president of the chamber, just the elected position, we talked about developing a leadership program in Manhattan Beach that could teach potential leaders how a whole community has to work together. You learn how the city works with the schools and with the charities and with the business community and with the service clubs, et cetera, and the athletic clubs. And you go through this whole program and you can see how a community really is a whole community has to work together to make decisions. So you're not making decisions in a vacuum. And I remember I was one of the co-founders with Paul Allman. And I remember telling Paul, boy, if we can get a class every 2 or 3 years, this would be great. And actually, so it's far exceeded my expectations. And the main reason for that was Paul Allman, because he took the leadership as the facilitator right from the start and did an absolutely fabulous job. So if there's any, you know, I helped start it, that's one thing. But the people that made it successful were the people that followed Paul Allman, Kathleen Terry, et cetera, et cetera. And they have taken it to a level that I never thought was possible. And if you look at the results, you can look at, well, 4 out of the 5 city council people have gone through the leadership program. The presidents of service clubs have gone through the program, people on commissions. And I think it's helped really make Manhattan Beach a better place. And so I'm proud to be the founder, but as far as the success, that really belongs to the people that, starting with Paul, that have gone through the class. And we've got some great people that have did a fine job for Manhattan Beach because I think the program's helped a lot, and I'm proud of that. So that's the story.
But let's bring a little folksiness to it, Russ. Weren't you in the backyard having a barbecue or something, and all of a sudden you guys kind of dreamed up this or came up with this plan and.
So you're talking 30 years ago. I can't remember what I did last week.
So.
We were just kicking it around. Actually, one of the reasons it started is we were thinking, what can the chamber do? Because I was on the chamber. What can the chamber do to really make a difference in this community other than support the business community? And we used to have this annual mayor speech, and I'd given a couple of them. And I said, you know, why don't we start something important? Because all the mayor speech does is put most people to sleep, because I did it twice. And so that's when we came up with the idea of this leadership program. I don't exactly remember when it was, but it turned out it's a pretty good idea.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. So I do have,
by the way,
build on.
So may I tell my Santa Float story?
I got one too.
My Santa Float story, Stephen, was after all the hoopla and the leadership raising money and the thing was built and we had public outings and all that stuff, and I'd come over to the chamber. Shortly after I came over to the chamber, a person who I've known here for 20 years or so popped in my office, and she's a very powerful finance person who is part of a women's president's organization and all that, and she came and she said, "Mark, I have something very serious to talk to you about." And she goes, "Why, if there is a Santa float, I think there should be a Jewish float." And I said, "Well, okay. First of all," I said, "I'll get Stephen right on that. And what are we going to have, Moses on the float? Is that what we're going to do?" And it will be during the 8 days, during Hanukkah and all of that. And but anyway, right. She was serious. She wanted a Moses. The Santa float resonated so much with this community. She thought that the Jewish culture needed to be represented by a float that would go throughout the neighborhood. So you may be getting a call, Stephen.
So I actually, you know, the funny thing is I got a call similar to that. I'm not sure if it was the same person, but I have heard that before. We try to be very non-denominational. We don't play, any particular religious orientation of music. We really try to be as neutral as we possibly can. But still, some people feel underrepresented, and I'm not sure what we can do about that. But if they want to do their own Santa float, or as you said, Moses float, or whatever it might be, I have the template, and I can certainly get involved and help them do that.
Excellent.
And I thought, Mark, what happened on the float stays on the float. That's the new mantra is what happens on the float stays on the float. Or maybe that was just Jackie and Joe's night that it needs to stay on the float.
Maybe.
Well, I have a Santa float story too, and it's probably going to top all of yours. But
no, it's not.
Year,
you haven't heard mine.
Okay. Last year, Stephen, when I was on the float and we were at a stop and all the kiddies come around and we're giving out the candy canes and stuff, I turn around and who's standing there but my gynecologist? And I said, I said, "Hey, Doc," and get this, she didn't recognize me. Can't imagine why.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. All right.
Well, I'm not going to ask you to make
– Yeah.
Never mind. I'm not going to go there. Okay, this is Russ. I've got a Santa Float story. My wife was the one who started the Neighborhood Watch Program in Manhattan Beach back when we had a little problem with residential burglaries, and she's been the executive director ever since. And every year, one of the days on the Santa Float is done by the Neighborhood Watch people. And as you know, they have a lead truck that goes ahead of it playing music. Well, she went out there, it was about a dozen people, mainly men, and it turned out the truck was a stick shift, and none of the men knew how to drive a stick shift. My wife had to drive the lead car because she was the only person there that knew how to drive a stick shift car. Anyway.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, well, that's good. That's good. Woman power, the only one that knew how to drive a stick. I love that.
It's great. So, anyway,
Joe,
so where are we?
Joe, let's do a really quick station break. Yes.
Yes. Let's do that. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the South Bay Show. But today we're focused on leadership Manhattan Beach. And we have two guests with us that can really give us some color and flavor of what it's like to be involved both in leadership Manhattan Beach and as residents and, great volunteers from Manhattan Beach, Stephen Carvel and Russ Lesser. We're excited to have them. We're going to talk more with them. And we also have more stories about the Santa Float and all things Manhattan Beach. Take it away, Jackie.
Okay.
Also,
all right.
Jackie, I'm going to step away for a few minutes in a minute.
Yes, yes. So Stephen, since you are on the board this year, tell us, because I mentioned it in the intro, you have plans for the 2018-2019. But before you get into the specifics, what is the timing of it? When does the leadership cl- class start? When does it end? How long is it?
Sure. So I'm going to just take a step back and maybe give some of your listeners who aren't completely familiar with the program a little bit of overview, and then I'll move into your questions. So one of the biggest things that leadership does every year is take a class, what we call a class, of about 25 people who are interested in the community, and we take them through a nine-month program. They meet twice a month for about 3 hours each meeting. And they meet at different places. For example, they might meet at city council's chambers where they'll learn how city council operates. They might meet at the water facility, the regional communication center. So basically you sort of learn all the nuts and bolts of everything that goes on around us all day, every day that we don't really see. It just kind of seamlessly happens. The goal of that program, at least in my view, and we didn't have a disclaimer, so I'm going to say, you know, the views expressed are mine and mine alone and not necessarily reflective of the organization or the program. But the goal, I think, in my view, is to take those 25 people who are interested in the community, teach them about the community, and give them some direction so that when they come out of that program, they can move right into some other position that continues to provide benefit to the community. And so what we're really oriented toward is giving them a broad exposure and meeting and introducing them to all the people that can further their interests in assisting the community. So that's the program. The class starts in August with a retreat. Sort of the Phoenix principle. We bring them in, we tear them down, we build them up, and we send them into the class. And then the class continues on. We have one retreat sort of midway where we again just tear them down and build them up, and then we finish the class. And one of the things that we do in terms of teaching leadership and the skills of leadership is we teach them how people interact with each other. And that for me was a really big part. So I'm a small business person. I'm not exposed to a lot of corporate training. So for me, some of the most beneficial parts were what people might think, oh, that's just, you know, more corporate training or things that they got in the company that they work for. But you have to remember, a lot of people don't get that. And they don't get a lot of training in how to interact with people and the different personality types. One of the things that we do is we develop the DISC profile. And people sort of learn where they fit in that profile system, and they learn how to interact with other people based on their profile, whether someone's a support person or someone is whatever category they fit into, there are ways to interact with that person to make that interaction more effective. And so that's one of the things that we really focus on. And then as sort of a training tool, the class will adopt a project, and the class goes through a process where they look for a project that they think will benefit the community. They bring it before the class. Each member is encouraged to bring an idea. For example, in the most recent class, I believe something like 100 ideas were submitted. The class goes through a process where they analyze whether it's something they want to do, something that benefits the community. Is it broad enough in scope to benefit a broad range of the community? Can they raise enough money to do it? Can they finish it on time? So these are the key factors in this project. And then the tools that they've learned in the first half of the program are put to work in the second half of the program, where they work with each other in sort of a loose structure, still a facilitated structure, but a loose structure to accomplish their class project. So most recently, they had over 100 ideas. I was really lucky. In my class, we had just a couple of ideas, and as soon as we talked about the Santa Float, everything fell away because it was just so iconic. And literally, in my view, from the day the idea of renovating the Santa Float was presented, everyone just focused with laser-like attention, and all of a sudden, 27 people just, they focused on the Santa Float. So that's sort of what the class does. It begins, as I said, in August with the retreat, and then it'll be facilitator-led, each of those classes, in a different sort of topic, but all sort of combined around teaching people to work together and at the same time teaching them about the community that they live in.
Wow.
So, Jackie, I'm not sure if that answered your question. I maybe got off on a tangent there.
No, it absolutely answered it. You know, what you're doing is you're grooming individuals for future service to the community, which is a fabulous idea. You know, it's interesting. Just yesterday, we had on a couple of members of the Torrance Chamber, and they have their Torrance Leadership Torrance class, and we touched on that a little bit. And I had mentioned that, you know, Joe and I both come from big cities. And if you grew up in a big city, unless you have an immediate family member that is involved with city government, how it runs, all the things you just spoke about, you're clueless. Because in a big city, you don't have an opportunity to get up close and personal with the workings of a municipality. And that's one of the things I absolutely love about living in a small town is that you actually have this opportunity. It's just a matter of stepping up and making it happen. Now, you just gave us a great description of how this works. Tell me, is Manhattan Beach leadership class based on, is there like a national format, or was that developed completely on its own? I know, Russ, you said you had been exposed to it in Long Beach. Did you take their format and then customize it to Manhattan Beach? How did that work?
Where it is now. There's leadership programs all over the country, and I'm we started one in Long Beach, and it's a lot bigger city, so it's different. So when we started leadership in Manhattan Beach, we just customized it to Manhattan Beach needs, because we're a small town, and you're right. I mean, we still have the small town feel, and people help each other out. They're neighbors. Your neighbors are your friends in Manhattan Beach. So it's totally different than a big city. Never having lived in a big city, I don't really know much about that, but all I know is that we customize the program to satisfy our needs of a small town where a lot of people get involved, and it's worked very well. We're very proud of the results, and I think Manhattan Beach is a far better place to live and work because of the leadership program.
Well, it's interesting, but a lot of people probably are not even aware of all the things that they see in Manhattan Beach on a daily, if not weekly, basis that was a product of each of these classes over the last 26 years. If you're running along the Veterans Parkway, along the Chip Path, you see the big wave sculpture that's there. That's a leadership project. That's actually a time capsule that'll be opened up in 2025, I think, or somewhere around in there. The clock, the telescopes on the pier, the drought-tolerant garden in front of the post office, the ping pong tables over by Dorsey Field, the renovated tot lot that the city had allocated $500,000 to that tot lot, and leadership came in and did it for what, Steve?
$55,000 is my
understanding. $55,000,
wow.
The volunteer help. So,
and we put that $500 back into the city's budget, too, after
right.
that.
Right. I'm trying to get them to give that difference to the chamber, but they're not really buying into it. But all those things, I mean, there are just so many things around Manhattan Beach that were given, that were a product of Leadership Manhattan that are iconic in a sense now. They're taken for granted that are there. Even someone who did something 20 years can point to it with their family and say that was something our class did for this town.
I think, Mark, one of the reasons maybe it's hard for people to recognize that is there's not a lot of signage or plaques that go up on that stuff, and I think it speaks to the humility of the organization. We're just interested in helping. We don't need credit for helping. We're behind the scenes. And by teaching this class as we go through, what we're really looking to do is we're looking to leverage. We're not looking to get a group of people together to do a one-off project. We're looking to develop a mindset in the community where everyone is always, all the time, doing good for the community. And it's a special organization that we're able to do that.
Well, it's interesting. When I took the class, one of the things that I told the facilitators and everyone involved in the class was that, man, because the first half of the class, you're getting to know your town, you're getting to know the city and the city leaders and the school board and all that. So the first half, and you're getting to know yourself and other people in your class intimately. I mean, there were 16s in the class, and after the retreat and first few weeks, next thing you know, you were just dealing with them like you would. That's where I think it's a great program for those teens, because they're treated as adults, and their accountability is what you would have for adults. And it's really a great project for them, or a great program for them. But
So, Mark, could I just kind of add to that for a moment? So, yeah, the teens are amazing. You sit down, you forget you're talking to teens. They're so mature and so responsible, so adult in everything. And one of the things that I think we have to also bring up is that their involvement in this program, really sends young people out into the world with the mindset to do good. And the other thing that it does is it really helps them in terms of getting into, you know, furthering their education. Have them having leadership Manhattan Beach or a teen liaison position on their resumes, I think, really pushes them over the top in a lot of cases. And these are all superlative kids. When I went through the teens that we had, just they blew my mind. I'll tell you, I was nowhere like that when I was in high school.
Yeah, I could barely find my way home.
Yeah.
Well, that's
it's funny that you mentioned that, because again, yesterday's program with the Torrance Chamber, they have a separate program called LEAD for the teens, and that LEAD kind of grooms them for leadership Torrance. So they have a separate program for them, which is another way to go, you know, to go about it. But Mark, tell us about your experience when you went to class.
Well, what I was going to say, though, is in the second half of the year is when you come up with your project and the way you even come about coming up with which project you're going to go with. It's is a learning experience in itself and in a real fair way, and everybody gets a chance to step up and present their idea. Some are doing it individually, some are doing it as groups. But here's the thing that I noticed. Once you get the project underway and you are assigned a position as a marketing director or whatever in working on this project, fundraising, sponsorship, all of that, I got to tell you, if you can learn to manage volunteers, you can run any Fortune 500 company.
Boy, that's never true.
Oh, because you don't have anything to hold over a volunteer's head. Okay, so you really have to up your management skills on, and that's what it teaches you to do, how to work with different personalities, and it's what it's supposed to teach you to do. And if you can get that skill down, whether you go to work at the city or be a commissioner or city council or get involved, doesn't matter. You will take a skill that'll help you in anything you do when you learn how to manage people, and a great place to learn is when you manage volunteers. I had a great experience.
So when you say that, that's you weren't managing them. It was the people that facilitate.
Well, the thing is, the facilitator, in a sense, the facilitator, but the facilitator just facilitates.
They give you
the skills. They give you the skills, then you are to put those skills into place. Like, you learn about yourself, you learn about different personalities in the first half, and you meet all the movers and shakers here in Manhattan Beach and get to know Manhattan Beach from the inside out. But then the second half of the class is now you're taking those skills and you're using them to manage a project. And this might
be a
40,000.
Right.
Yeah, so you assign a project lead. Project manager, basically, and then that project manager, you have a marketing person, a sponsorship, and, you know, they have to manage the project. So in a sense, it's a small company, but it's a company of volunteers who might sleep late or might not show up for an assignment, who might not follow through, who might not, you know, and so what do? Where's the accountability? I mean, you've really got to learn how to manage them and get the most out of those people in a way that won't send them screaming for the hills or anything like that. And the only way, you don't have a job to hang over them. You don't have pensions or retirement funds or anything like that. And so it becomes a real skill.
It's really a laboratory for the skills that you learned in the first half of the class, which is people's personalities and how do you communicate with different personality types.
Yep.
Yeah, that's very interesting, particularly in this day and age. I'm just curious, what is the dropout rate like for these classes, Stephen?
Oh, it's incredibly low. In fact, we have people clamoring to get in, So I that data is kind of beyond my knowledge, but I'll tell you, having been through the class and having been around for several years, I don't know that there's ever, maybe there's been one voluntary drop that I am aware of due to other time commitments. I think we'd have to probably distinguish it, a drop after the class has started or a drop before the class. But once the class starts, what happens is the energy in the class is so I don't know how to describe it. It's almost like addictive. You can't wait to get back to the class to see these people that you're working with or that you've met. That first retreat really is a very strong bonding experience. It's a two-day retreat. We take the class to an off-site, undisclosed location where they're separated from their families, and they really just interact with each other and bond with each other. And after that, I would think that the drop rate is astronomically low.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Russ, are you actively involved in any way with Leadership Manhattan today?
No, they just call me if they have a problem.
Oh, okay.
We call Russ when we need some guidance.
We keep him tucked away in a corner, and we bring him out when we need. And you know, his eyes are squinting, and you know, he's trying to look at the light, and you know, so.
Okay.
Well, you know, but I would say, Jackie, I would say Russ is actively involved, actually, because, you know, the founders, their tentacles reach all the way through this organization. We just had our 25th anniversary party, so it's been operating here in Manhattan Beach for 25 years. And you asked earlier, how's the curriculum? It's a curriculum of our own development. Over the years, over the 25 years, I've had little to nothing to do with it, but it's, I think, very successful.
And I think Russ has the institutional knowledge, not only of the city, but of leadership, and he has the passion. And also, if you had to point to a model of someone who has the skills, as well as the honesty and the brutal honesty, which is what I love, then you got the guy that you want to talk to on any sort of issue, whether it be Leadership Manhattan or anything else that has to do with the city.
Boy, Will Rogers was right. You can fool some of the people all the time.
Yeah.
That's true. Well, I think it comes back to, you know, as Joe and I always refer back to the 20%, the people that are active and want to make an effort and volunteer and help their community. But it's probably
a lot less than 20.
Yeah, I'd say it's close.
If you look around, I bet there's 500 people in Manhattan Beach that make everything happen.
Right, and even in the service clubs,
wow.
I've noticed, even in the big service clubs, which I'm a part of and a member of many of these clubs, it's always the same people, people. And we're trying to do everything we can to engage others. We're trying to all kinds of tricks. You know,
it's a shame too because, you know, the, I don't know, the younger you are when you learn that helping others and making the world a better place is a lot more satisfying than just watching out for yourself. You're going to be a much happier person.
Well,
and
you
much
also,
more satisfying. But it takes, you know, I don't know how you convince a lot of people of that. But it's,
but you can also look at it. You can also look at it as, and Leadership Manhattan's a good place to do it. A lot of people join an interview for Leadership Manhattan because they want to meet the movers and shakers of Manhattan Beach. They want to network with people in the class who are business owners and business leaders and all of that. But once they get through, that's why the retreat is mandatory. If you cannot be at the retreat, you cannot be in that year's program. It's a mandatory participation because we all used to say we'd get on that bus. I saw people get on the bus because this is, you know, last thing a CEO wants to do is get on a bus with a bunch of other people or not even a CEO, but just a business person. I mean, it's not CEO driven. It's got everybody in there, all walks of life, male, female, and teens. And you get on that bus, and it's kind of a chore. You know, you're being taken away from, you know, stuff you think you need to be doing, and your family.
Wait a minute, Mark. Can you bring your personal electronic devices with you?
That'd be a great idea if you can't.
Yeah, I don't – Steve, what's the latest? I know that first of all, where you're going, usually you don't have any
right. We strategically we strategically locate it, so even though you bring them, they don't work. Course, you can bring your phone, and you can remain in touch with people that are important to you. But
you're
really so
active.
Meetings,
you can't.
Yeah, you're so active. You know, we keep that program moving that you really don't have time to stop. And disengage from what's going on around you, and that's a really vital component of the retreat. And I'll just, you know, I mirror what Mark felt or said. I was the same way. You know, I'm a small business person. It was hard for me to get away, from my family, and I stepped onto that bus thinking, oh, boy, here we go, very skeptical. And, you know, within minutes, we had a gentleman in my class named Jack Tracy. Jack is known all around town. He plays the ukulele, and Jack began playing the ukulele.
Jack.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, the, you know, the bonding just started, and, you know, we're singing songs, and it just continued all the way through the weekend. And I'll tell you also, you know, these people in your class, these are some of the closest friends that you're going to make for the rest of your life. You spend a lot of time with them, but they're also, you're sort of preconditioned because they're people like you. They're people who want to be involved. And once you meet people like that, it's very easy to be around them.
The byproduct is, and if you get with any leadership alumni group at their socials that they have, any of those groups, the byproduct of that is every person thinks their class was the best.
It's absolutely true.
I mean, that was the experience they had. The experience was so positive that they think their class was the best, and no one else had a class like that, you know.
And I think that there should probably be a Jack Tracy in every class, huh? That would be nice.
Yeah.
Or just make him go every year.
We should. He should be our plant in every class.
So, Stephen, What are some new things that you think you're going to implement this year? I'd heard a rumor that you're going to ask city council to be a regular participant, what are some of the things that you think you want to, as now being on the board, that some of the changes you think you want to make, or maybe even in the class?
Sure. So we got a lot going on this year. Leadership has been a very growing organization. I think now it's estimated we have somewhere around 600 alumni, 600 people who've been through the program. The biggest thing that we have going this year is we really want to tap into that alumni. We want to increase our engagement with the alumni. And we have sort of a holistic system that we want to go through in increasing that engagement. And it starts, I think, with some of the things that you mentioned. One of them is, you know, adding a liaison position with city council. And a liaison position benefits us in a number of ways. One, council has insight into what's going on in the program. But more importantly, we get, I think we'll get more support from city council if they have a greater understanding of what's going on. Just like the chamber has a liaison position on the board, and as a founding organization, and we get a huge amount of support from the chamber. In fact, we think of ourselves as a chamber partner, although we may not, you know, you guys are so powerful, maybe we're not really a chamber partner and we just want to be.
We're powerful.
So we have, you know, we have a 5-point strategy that we're sort of working through, and I'll just kind of talk about some of them. You know, in terms of increasing this engagement with the alumni, you know, we have a lot of alumni like Russ who have a lot of experience, and not only in our program but other programs, but in the business world, and we want their input. So we're going to implement a regularly scheduled, what we're going to call a town hall meeting. We want to have all of as many of our alumni as we can possibly get to come to these meetings and pose, you know, suggestions or ideas, and we're going to figure out a way for those who can't make the meetings to be able to submit their suggestions and ideas.
I like having the city council liaison because, as you know, even with in our project, for instance, 2012, and certainly if you have an art project, which is always something we try to steer classes away from because the bureaucracy of trying to get a piece of art established in Manhattan Beach, you know, is, you know, everybody, the beauty is in the eye of the beholder. But by having a liaison of city council on the board, they can actually give you some guidance on, you know what, that's an uphill battle. Maybe you should go this direction or do this. You know,
sure.
So that really gives them, because they've got the knowledge.
That's, you know, and that's part of what some people join the program to learn is how to navigate city council.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we didn't talk about it, but every class project that benefits the community or is in some way going to be, you know, installed in the community has to receive council approval.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of one of the classes is how do you approach city council with your idea? How do you move that through their agenda process and the approval or the disapproval stage? And all the pieces that you have to put in place ahead of that. You know, the artwork is a really tough one. Ours, so far, at least in my class and the subsequent classes, were pretty easy because they were more utilitarian and functional. Some classes have floundered a little bit. You know, they found that they needed not only city council approval, but also the coastal commission approval. Anything touching, you know, the beach or the water requires the approval of an entirely different organization, which I believe is, you know, orders of magnitude more complex than our city council in trying to get through. But that is part of the process that we think might get easier if we have a liaison, because now that liaison can be reporting back to council, oh, this is what they're doing, or...
Well, you have to have a champion. I think it's important that you have a champion at the city level. Just like Hometown Fair, we have a champion on council who sits in our meetings as a liaison. You know, the chamber, our board has a liaison from city council that sits in on the meetings that champions what the chamber is doing. You know, all of those things. I think it's important. And this organization has grown now to a point where it is an institution. It is a legacy in this town. And not in other towns, too, but this is our legacy. This is one. This is something that's important to us.
Absolutely, yeah. So, and then, you know, in terms of what we have going on for the future, really what we've done, and I don't have to get into the minutia, but we've looked at all of the comments that we've received over the last year. And we've come up with a plan to address all of those comments and hopefully the concerns raised by people who are commenting. So, you know, there are things that many, as I said before, small business people might not be exposed to. So one of the things is we're going to add a sensitivity training class to the class curriculum, because that's something I think that sometimes is missing, especially in these days. You know, we've all become all so incivil, and I know that you might
well,
have had...
Well, but it's digital. It's social media.
It is. It,
so
everyone's in
the
belief they're anonymous.
And sensitivity, and it has to go, especially those teens. The teens have to learn. No. I'm just saying,
you know,
that young people need to realize the damage you can do. Social media is a part of their DNA now. So they have to learn there is power in social media that they need to be aware of that can be damaging to another individual, because, you know, it's ruthless enough in some of the conversations in the schoolyard you have, let alone when you blast it out to thousands of people. So,
right. I think that is a big problem. And, you know, it's not – I will tell you this. I would think – that while the teens may need it, I would think that the adults would need it too, because we're not.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Many of
yeah.
us are not internet natives. You know, the internet didn't come along until I was much older, and so I think it's easy for us to sort of think, oh, I'm just making an anonymous comment. This isn't going to affect anyone or hurt anybody, or they got to get over it and they be tougher, toughen up, whatever it is that you tell yourself. We all have to understand that these comments land on people, and we have to think ahead about how these comments are going to be
right.
perceived.
You have to remember that it's the job of the older generation to criticize the younger generation. But you have to remember also that Aristotle said, based on what I see in the kids of Athens today, there's no way civilization can last another 100 years, and somehow we survive.
And Ross, I think somehow we all feel the same way every single generation, too.
Right.
You know something?
Right.
I think that is a fantastic way to wrap up the show. Some wise words there.
Jackie, I just want to give one more. Russ may have heard this before, because my great friend Steve Mitchell used to say the beatings will continue until morale improves.
Yeah. Jackie and Joe, can I throw one more point in there?
Yes.
So there's a holistic plan we're preparing to send it out to our alumni. So anyone who tuned in today hoping to hear the entire plan, I'm sorry we got a little sidetracked and ran out of time, but we'll be sending out a comprehensive statement from the board to all of our alumni through our engagement program. It'll describe all of these items, and it'll tell you exactly what you need to do to understand them, or if you don't, call me and I'll be happy to talk to you about them.
All right, Stephen, give us
great.
A website address, contact information, phone numbers, all that stuff.
For leadership, we're
www.leadershipmb.org.
That's the best way to reach us. And on that website, you can find links to all of the current board members and their bios and emails. I encourage anyone who has questions, contact me directly. I'm happy to talk to you. But I have found, if you have questions, I'd probably rather talk to you in person, because I think that email is just not a really great form of communication. So all of our information is on there. Shoot me an email if you want to talk. I'll reply, or you can Google me. I'm easy to find. But
www.leadershipmb.org.
Awesome.
www.leadershipmb.org. Jill, let's wrap it up.
Well, what a great show. We're so thrilled to have access to these leaders in Manhattan Beach. Stephen Carvell and Russ Lesser, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
You're welcome. It was fun.
Thank you for being on. I really appreciate it from both of you, especially you, Russ. Stephen, I see you all the time. Yeah.
another great Manhattan Beach Chamber 360. You'll find these every Friday at 8 a.m., 8 to 9. So please tell your friends and neighbors. Everyone should be on. Everyone should be involved. We're going to grow this, as Russ Lesser said, maybe 1,000 people contribute to the heart of the activities in Manhattan Beach, and that's an amazing number. It should be many times that, but we'll see in the future. And, of course, always, thank you, Jackie and Mark.
Always a pleasure, Joe.
Happy Friday, everyone.
Happy Friday.
Have a great weekend.
Bye-bye, everybody.